Welcome to the Region Candidate Forum, sponsored by the University of Minnesota Alumni Association on behalf of the state legislature. The UMAA, which serves and engages more than 477,000 graduates, has a vested interest in ensuring that the university's governing body, the Board of Regents, is comprised of highly qualified, mission-driven leaders who are committed to the long-term success of our world-class university. It is important to note that the UMAA does not endorse any candidates for regent. With more than 290,000 University of Minnesota Twin Cities alumni living in every county in Minnesota, the UMAA recognizes the importance of the university as an economic engine that produces an educated workforce, serves the public, and conducts research that impacts nearly every aspect of life in our state. We also thank all of you, legislators and their designates, alumni and members of the university community, and the general public for attending today's forum. This forum is being recorded and broadcast live. Also, the audio will be made available afterwards on the UMAA website. Here's our forum format. We will start by inviting each candidate to give a 60-second opening statement, followed by prepared questions from the UMAA. We will then move to questions from the audience and wrap up with each of you providing a 30-second closing statement. Because all five of you are vying for the same seat, we will ask each of you to answer each question. Answers to the questions are timed. Our timer will give you a 10-second warning by holding up a yellow paper sign. And Dan, there's the yellow sign. Dan Gary is our official timer. This is an open forum and everyone is welcome to offer questions. They can be submitted in several ways. On social media, you can send your questions to the Twitter handle at UMN Alumni. Audience members attending the forum in person can also write down any questions they have on the questions cards. UMAA staff will collect your cards throughout the forum. Thank you, candidates, for taking the time to join us here today and committing to this process. Once you see this yellow 10 seconds remaining sign, we ask that you wrap it up. A red stop sign will be waved when the time limit is reached. Now we will start with our opening statements. We will start alphabetically by last name. First of all, Mary Davenport.
Good evening. I'm honored to be here tonight. My motivation to serve as a regent comes from the culmination of over three decades of addressing critical issues within higher education. My passion for serving students, and an ongoing commitment to working with partners to invest in our future, including public and private sectors, and especially the state legislature. The University of Minnesota, with its unique land-grant heritage and higher education overall, is at a critical juncture. We are facing challenges that get at the heart of research and student success. We must address questions concerning financial sustainability and how the University of Minnesota can continue to contribute to Minnesota's economic vitality, quality of life, and global challenges. I believe I bring the right skill set to respond to these challenges.
Thank you, Mary. Next, Brooks Edwards.
Thank you, Mr. DuBois, and thank you to the Alumni Association for hosting this evening. It's an honor to be on the podium with such a strong group of regent candidates. I believe the University of Minnesota should be viewed as the crown jewel of our state, one of our greatest assets. Higher education drives our economy and impacts our quality, quantity of life. Across our five unique campuses, the U's programs touch the life of every Minnesotan. I was born and raised in Minnesota. I have deep roots to the university, and now as a professor of medicine and a practicing cardiologist at Mayo Clinic, I've held many leadership positions. I've been recognized as a strategic thinker and a leader who can bring diverse groups of people together for the betterment of all. As a regent, I believe my 40 years of healthcare and education could bring new and valuable experience to the board as together we all chart our new course into the future. Thank you.
Thank you, Brooks. Next, Jean Hankerson.
I'd like to thank the Alumni Association for hosting this event. I am a graduate of the University of Minnesota Law School. I recently retired after 33 years at Federated Mutual Insurance Company, where I led their compliance department. In that role, I worked with all business areas dealing with legislative and regulatory changes that impacted our business operations and how we were going to respond to those to meet the needs of the company and our policyholders. Additionally, I led Federated's efforts to respond to the Affordable Care Act and the state variations on that theme so that we could continue to provide health insurance coverage to our policyholders. I've served on the Minnesota Petro Fund Board for over 20 years. I believe that my background in business and health insurance would be an asset to the board as they look forward to the ongoing challenges of a complex system like the University of Minnesota. Thank you.
Thanks, Jean. Next, Wendy Shannon.
I want to thank the University of Minnesota Alumni Association for hosting this forum and the other Board of Regents candidates here this evening for their interest in serving the University of Minnesota. I am Wendy Shannon. The University of Minnesota is very important to me and has provided me with my educational footprint, 3 degrees, a BS in 76, MA in 81, and a PhD in 1989. I am passionate about education, early childhood, college, and beyond. In my application for the Board of Regents position, I stated that I am a facilitator, a collaborator, process-oriented analytical thinker, and use data to make decisions and recommendations. I was appointed to serve on the Rochester Higher Ed Education Development Council 2005-2007, which helped create UMR and chaired the program committee. I am honored to be here this evening and a part of the nomination process. Thank you.
Thanks, Wendy. Next, Randy Simonson.
Thank you. I've had a close relationship with the University of Minnesota for many years, having obtained my PhD here in 1979. My daughter obtained her bachelor's in history here. My son obtained a master's degree in public health. He got his doctorate degree here, and he did his residency here. So it's a close relationship. In my professional career, I've been involved in the startup and subsequent sale of two animal health companies and been part of management teams for four multinational companies. In all these companies, I've been involved in hiring University of Minnesota graduates and sponsoring externships. I've conducted many research projects with university faculty, served as an adjunct faculty member, co-advised graduate students, and participated in teaching courses. I've served on several advisory committees. Outside my professional life, I've served on a variety of boards, committees, foundations, etc. Additionally, my wife and I have had the opportunity to start a safe, sober facility for those getting out of prison, treatment, or those involved in domestic violence or other hurts, habits, and hang-ups. Thank you.
Thank you, Randy. Now we'll move on to our questions. The first question, the Board of Regents strives to focus its time on issues of greatest consequence to the university. What do you believe are the top three issues currently facing the university? And Mary, we'll start with you.
Okay, thank you. Definitely, we need to take a look at tuition and student debt. And there's been challenges, great challenges around that. And it really takes a combination of the board, the legislature, business and industry, and partnerships to address those costs working together. Achieving an increased financial support is a stakeholder investment in the future. And it really is all of our responsibility to provide the education to our citizens and people of Minnesota. We can work together to look at reduction in expenses where there's unnecessary duplication while keeping the uniqueness of each of the campuses. But we really need to focus on student success and how we can better accommodate those achievements while balancing the budget.
Thanks, Mary. Brooks?
Thank you. Thinking about the three challenges that are facing the university, I would say in the near term, one is the healthcare campus and the relationship between the medical school, UM physicians, and Fairview Health. As everyone knows, that's been a challenging relationship. It's up for renegotiation, and I think having a healthcare background would be of value to the Regents. Clearly, Mary is right that tuition and the balance between in-state and out-of-state tuition, and especially finding tuition for the middle-income families, support for middle-income families where there may be a gap in their ability to attend the university. And finally, presidential succession. As we know, President Kaler's current contract is in its seventh year, and so it will be coming due during the span of whoever's chosen as a regent, and I think dealing with that will be important.
Thanks, Brooks. Jean?
I think that the three most important issues are, in fact, somewhat interrelated in that they all deal with the financial aspects of operations at the U. I think we need to deal with the issues of tuition and debt and the financial literacy of the students regarding those two issues and what they're getting out of it, the balancing of the in-state and out-of-state tuition. Also looking at controlling the costs of the university, in particular the administrative costs, to make sure we can minimize that tuition as much as possible. And finally, dealing with the academic healthcare operations to make sure that we are maximizing the return on that investment and providing the services needed, which will help stabilize the financial position of the university.
Thanks, Jean. Wendy?
Thank you. I totally agree with the tuition costs and student debt. Related to that, I would like to also suggest increasing time activity on allowing students, encouraging students to finish in four, what that might look like in terms of rather than, I think that it's over 60% of students right now finish in four. UMR has had quite a bit of success with that initiative. And also to the list, I would add increasing the number of diverse students that the University of Minnesota serves. And that would also include international students.
Thank you, Wendy. Randy?
As already mentioned, Minnesota First, affordable education, and student debt are obviously critical issues. Adequate resources for independent research, especially in the area of ag, when you look at how important the ag industry is in our state, in the animal health industry and poultry industry, an emphasis on research for that. The university's ability to enhance economic development is key, is an important issue for me too. So along with the budget and so on and so forth. So I'm very committed.
Thank you, Randy. Moving on now to our next question. The board provides governance of the institution. Would you share your views on the characteristics of a healthy governance board and what makes a good regent? We'll start with Brooks.
Thank you for that question. Indeed, if you look on the regent website, there's a very nice document of the responsibilities of the individual regent and the regents as a group, and governance of the university is first and foremost. If we think about what makes a good board, I think I'm a believer in the Doris Kearns Goodwin book, A Team of Rivals. It's good to have different opinions. We don't want a board that's made up of everyone coming to it with the same ideas. So I believe in a diverse group, a diverse board that represents Minnesota and the interests of Minnesota, and then a respectful but free and open dialogue in their deliberations.
Thanks, Brooks. Jean?
The role of the board is to provide a vision for the university and how they will accomplish their mission and provide guidance to the administration in moving forward with that vision and the mission. It's not a job to micromanage what the administration is doing. Understanding the details of what every department does is not the role of a regent. It's the big picture. What is the university doing to move forward on its goals and objectives? As a regent, you need the ability to disagree professionally, to ask the hard questions, and to listen and come to an agreement to the best you can. And if that's not possible, then the majority will rule and we all move along professionally. Thank you.
Thank you, Jean. Wendy?
What I'd like to add is, in terms of your role in governance, is to help monitor the strategic plan and relate and ask questions related to the implementation of that plan. I have quite a bit of experience with the continuous improvement processes, including Baldrige. I'm not afraid to ask questions related to why, to be analytical and thoughtful, and again, to use data to make decisions and recommendations.
Thank you, Wendy. Randy?
I'm an advocate of the TEAM acronym, Together Everyone Achieves More. I also think we need to have a good diverse group on there with a diverse background, those that understand business, those that understand education, and so on and so forth. So I think that's very good as far as being involved in the strategic plan as well as monitoring that strategic plan. Budgetary issues are very, very important to me, looking at how we can actually increase the income, as I will call it. When I was looking at the budgets, the state represents something like less than 20%. When I look at contracts, it's something less than 10%. What are ways we can increase that income, not just lower the cost of it, of the administration, so on and so forth. I do appreciate what the president has done as far as lowering administrative costs. I think 18 is the last of the five-year program that he's working on to lower it by $90 million. But I also think there's a lot more that we can do.
Thank you, Randy. Mary?
Beyond the board makeup, which should be made up of people with different expertise, really gets at transparency and commitment to the goals and the objectives that the board wishes to accomplish. Transparency is key, and it involves consultation, communication, open communication, and a mix of both facts as well as testimony from users, stakeholders, and others. It needs to be honest. Regions need to be, again, transparent, have open communication, and be able to reach out into the constituency across the state as well as the district they represent to really listen to the people, to the legislature, to business and industry, and match that up with what are the challenges so that we can really get ahead in the state as we look at education as a primary resource.
Thank you, Mary. Moving on now to our next question. Academic freedom and constitutional autonomy are longstanding important principles for the University of Minnesota. How should the board work with the legislature to preserve and strengthen these principles while being responsive to the state? Gene, we'll start with you.
I believe that the university needs to have an ongoing cooperative relationship with the legislature on a number of topics. But again, in the same way that the Board of Regents should not be micromanaging the operations of the university, neither should the legislature be micromanaging those operations. It's always best to have more speech than less speech, and academic freedom to look into whatever topics or discuss whatever issues they would like to discuss. And the university is a creature of the legislature, but it needs to be independent so that it's not whipsawed by the ever-changing makeup of the legislature. Thank you.
Thank you, Jean. Wendy?
I believe in and support academic freedom for students and faculty, I think, in a respectful environment and interaction and without retaliation and any kind of punitive actions.
Thanks, Wendy. Randy?
I also support academic freedom. I support a close relationship with the legislature. Again, as I've already mentioned, I think working on putting Minnesota first, looking at the student graduation rate, how many students end up getting jobs here in Minnesota, how many end up going elsewhere, what can we do to work together to help that program better. Those are things that are important to me, working with the legislature. And again, I agree we don't micromanage the day-to-day operations, but we oversight it.
Thanks, Randy. Mary?
Academic freedom is one of the hot topics on college and university campuses today. And it's very important that we respect academic freedom, but yet we can also express the values of a college and a university and come forward with those when there may be hate or other type of speech that's out there. Students need to be safe. and they need to have a safe place to express themselves regardless of their opinion. But it needs civility and respect and safety are paramount. Constitutional autonomy is a unique thing that occurs with land-grant institutions. And while the legislature, the autonomy is there, the legislature does have interest in what happens at the university. And so it's really a partnership working together to advance the state as a whole. And so there needs to be that conversation, transparency, and communication.
Thank you, Mary. Brooks?
Thank you. I, too, support academic freedom, and I believe it's important to do that in an environment of transparency. So things have to be open, above board, and you have to have people of the highest integrity at the university and as they exercise their academic freedom. Obviously, respectful dialogue is critical. The university should be a cauldron of ideas and dissenting ideas and different opinions that people can then feel free and safe to voice. The legislature is important. The legislature does have an important role in the university, and the legislature can help further particular agendas. I think of the University of Minnesota Mayo Partnership, which was a series of grants funded through the university, through the legislature, to further an agenda of that cooperation.
Thanks, Brooks. We'll move on now to our next question. The board continues to focus on keeping in-state tuition low while preserving and growing the excellence of the university. How would you balance the responsibility of funding the costs of education between the students and the state while maintaining quality? And we'll start, first of all, with Wendy.
Thank you. Thinking about tuition, it would need to be studied in terms of, are there other opportunities to increase revenue to bring into the University of Minnesota? And with that, also then looking at the costs of the operation to determine how tuition could be kept at a minimal level in terms of an increase. I think there could also be some incentives offered to, say, students if they were able to graduate and finish in four. So to look at some other opportunities to certainly keep tuition as low as possible with minimal increase.
Thanks, Wendy. Randy?
I think I agree with what you said as far as looking at ways to increase revenue to help with that tuition. I'm very much supportive of keeping the Minnesota students' tuition at the lowest possible rate. I think 2018 there's a 2% increase, which seems like it can be okay. But again, it's got to be balanced against debt and against the when people get out of school with 30 some thousand in debt, go to work for $40,000, it causes a lot of problems. So I think working with the students in the beginning to understand that problem is very important. But going after how the university can help develop more resources for the state of Minnesota, both in business economic development and other ways, when they license out patents, for example, that type of thing, how they can increase their revenue, not just from the state taxpayers and so on and so forth, but also that including that. Okay.
Thank you, Randy. Mary?
In Minnesota statute, there's the intent by the legislature to fund higher education 67% state and 33% other means, personal and family piece of that. We've gotten away from that, but I commend the legislature for maintaining that language in state statute, because I think that demonstrates the value that higher education has for us in the state. Certainly, we need to look at efficiencies. We need to take a look at structure. We need to take a look at private-public partnerships, whether it's scholarships or work-based kind of experiential learning that we can bring to the table, and not cut back on excellence. We can't afford to dilute excellence in the trade-off for saving money.
Thank you, Mary. Brooks?
Thank you very much. As we think about tuition, I alluded earlier to the middle-income families, and I think that's the group that really gets squeezed. We actually have very good programs for students coming from lower-income families, and happily, higher-income families may be in a position to help support the tuition, but the middle-income family is really squeezed. I think there are strategies. If you look at our in-state, out-of-state difference, the out-of-state students pay less than one time or less than double what in-state. At University of Michigan, the out-of-state students pay three times. At the University of Wisconsin, they pay just short of three times. We have an endowment that is just a third of the University of Michigan. If we can grow that endowment, we could have a better opportunity to fund scholarships and grants for students to help that middle-income group be able to attend without impediment.
Thanks, Brooks. Jean?
One of the first things that the university needs to do is control the costs, because costs are what drives the tuition. And that needs to be done by focusing on the core activities and making sure that we're controlling costs and not investing in things that don't further our core activities. And that will then spur excellence, because we will be focused on what matters, those core activities. I agree that we also need to look at the differentials between in-state and out-of-state tuition to make sure that we are maximizing the revenue from those sources. The university is supposed to be educating the students of Minnesota, and we need to do that first and do that at a cost that's affordable for them. We also need to take a look at what revenue sources are. This goes back to dealing with the academic health operations, and are we maximizing that, and how much subsidy is going to that that could better be used elsewhere if we could maximize that revenue.
Thank you, Jean. Moving on now to our next question. The university's success is vital to the health of our state. In general, where do you see the university excelling, and identify one area that you believe needs the most attention? And Randy, we'll start with you.
Yeah, the university is vital to the health in education and other areas. Again, what we've talked about as far as educating our students, trying to retain our students in Minnesota for job growth. Obviously, that helps with taxes, that kind of thing. I think that's very important. But I'm also very interested in taking the technology that we develop at the university and using that for growth in Minnesota. I know of a situation where we had a patent that was developed here in Minnesota, was out licensed to a company in Germany. It cost a lot of money to go to Germany, helped my company a little bit, but not as much as it could have. And so I think looking at things like that to address technology and job growth in Minnesota is good for the university, for Minnesota in general.
Thank you, Randy. Mary?
I think it's important to combine the research mission with the education mission and really focus on innovation. And by that, as example, undergraduate research is a key component to exposing our undergraduate students to research aspects where they can be creative, they can be innovative, they can work with the seasoned researchers, the doctorates, and really, and when it comes to diversity, it's an excellent way to bring diversity into the upper levels of research. And also through multi-sector, research doesn't happen in a silo. If you take that engineer, and you take that engineer with the software developer, and you take that software developer and engineer and put them in the medical school, what they can do. For example, the small pea-sized pacemaker that's worked on between the software engineer and medical doctor. More of that.
Thanks, Mary. Brooks?
Well, I think, not unusual for a forum like this to ask about where the problems are, and we certainly should focus on that. But before we get there, I would like to stress that there's all kinds of wonderful things going on at the university. And you ask about the schools that are doing well. The engineering school is incredibly highly ranked. The Carlson School of Business is an outstanding school. The graduates go on to do amazing things. We have challenges. In my area of medicine, I spoke earlier, I think The medical school is at a crossroads. Their rankings are falling. Their research has, funding has fallen. There's an opportunity to build that. And we have other medical campuses in the state that can work together, bringing people together. I believe that lifts all boats. And so the rising tide of helping everyone, helping the university, helps everyone through the state.
Thank you, Brooks. Jean?
One of the things that the university excels in is preparing the students of Minnesota for their futures and providing well-trained workers for the businesses that thrive and grow here in Minnesota. And I think that's something that we need to continue and work on, what the relationship is between the local businesses and the university. One area that I believe needs attention is how the outstate campuses are organized, funded, and dealt with as part of the university system. A lot of areas in outstate are facing worker shortages at this point. There may be some value in the university getting involved in making sure that we're encouraging students to participate in those outstate universities to create that workforce that's going to stay in those outstate areas that we need so much.
Thank you, Jean. Wendy.
Thank you. In terms of strengths of the University of Minnesota, I would say its reputation, and it is seen as the economic engine of our state. It's a research-based institution. In terms of challenges, I would name two. The first related to addressing what's needed for a global economy and our global world. Students are our future, and it's their future, not ours. So preparing them for the world that they're going to live in and interact with. Some of those jobs, we don't even know what they will be. And then the second challenge is to increase the number of diverse students as we look at our own population of our state and to make sure that they are all well represented at the University of Minnesota.
Thank you, Wendy. Before we move on to our next question, I want to remind the audience to submit their own questions to the UMAA staff who have question cards. Also, there's an opportunity for those of you who are participating in this via our webcast. You can tweet at UMN Alumni, that's at UMN Alumni, with your questions. Moving on now, board members make decisions that affect the lives of students who come from a wide variety of backgrounds. These issues include the student code of conduct, affirmative consent, funding for mental health, tuition rates, financial aid, and more. How would you get up to speed on student issues to learn how your votes would impact our diverse student body? And Mary, we will start with you.
Thank you. I'm in the weeds on this one. I deal with this on a daily basis. Student code of conduct, I've had the role of investigating decision-making consequences on all that. The students really have a voice, and that's demonstrated, especially at the university, with the affirmative consent example, where in policy making, they had language inserted there that then was replicated in the Minnesota state system. Policy, students need to have input on that. It's communication and, again, transparency. Students are a voice. They are organized and need to be respected for their input. So, again, it comes back to communications, transparency, working with them, and it's amazing what our students do. They just are amazing, learning democracy and learning the process, and they're a partner with the board.
Thank you, Mary. Brooks?
Thank you, Jim. It's a very good question of how do we listen to students and why is that important? And I would say that if you look at some of the very important advances in our society in the last 100 years, most, if not all of those, have started as a groundswell at the student base. The older population tends to accept the status quo. The students ask why, and that's critically important. How do I listen to students? I'm lucky I have a student. My daughter is currently a dental student at the university. I listen to her. I listen to her friends. My son recently graduated from the university. The regents have a student regent, which I think is critically important. That's not just a ceremonial post, but that should be a highly respected and sought after post, and we should listen to the student regents. And the student senate also weighs in, and I think we want to make sure that their voice is heard.
Thank you, Brooks. Jean?
I believe your basic question was how would I get up to speed on the issues facing the students, and there is a student board of regents that presents issues to the regular board of regents and is in touch with the issues facing the students, and I would certainly want to spend some time with those representatives and get to know what their issues are and what policies they've put forth, and that would be my connection to the students.
Thanks, Jean. Wendy?
I would start by reviewing and examining the current policies, and then also to look at what is best practice in terms of similar institutions, and then also listen to the voices of students by talking with the student regent group.
Thank you, Wendy. Randy?
I think communication with the students is key. I was meeting with a group of students a couple of weeks ago. They were questioning the cost of tuition for the arts because these were people in a technical area. And why are we having to spend all this money on the arts? I'm very much a supporter of the arts, and I think helping them to understand for a well-rounded education, but that communication is important, and ways that we might be able to combine the art programs to reduce those costs and explain that to the students. Another issue we brought up with another group of students, I think a week ago, is again on debt. I asked them what they get as far as advice and counseling on student debt, because I'm very concerned about that. You get out of the university with a four-year degree and 30-some thousands in debt, and you go to work for $40,000. And they said, well, we're taught how to get loans, but counseling on reducing debt and other ways to handle that seems to be limited. So those are things I'd look at.
Thank you, Randy. Moving on now to our next question. The university operates five campuses across the state. How could the university leverage the capabilities of each campus so that the system as a whole best serves the students and the state? And Brooks, we'll start with you.
Thanks very much. Well, coming from a town that is lucky enough to have a campus, the UMR, I do have experience with one regional campus. The regional campus system, when you look at it, it's a brilliantly designed system. I don't know that anyone started with the end in mind, but the Morris campus, the Crookston campus, the Duluth campus, they all bring unique features, and they enhance the state in so many ways. We have an opportunity for Native American students at one regional campus. The UMD certainly enriches our state. How could we bring it together? I think that there may be better ways to communicate for students to take courses at different campuses. The Crookston campus is highly electronic. You can take remote courses, and I think it's important for students to recognize that they're part of the University of Minnesota and its total breadth.
Brooks, thank you. Jean?
I believe that the best way to leverage the assets of the diverse system they have is to have the board finalize the strategic plan that they have been working on for some time that would provide guidance within the system of how assets are allocated when they become available, and making sure that there is coordination and minimal duplication of effort between the various campuses.
Thanks, Jean. Wendy?
I think the five campuses can actually learn from each other to raise the level of excellence. Each campus kind of has their own niche area. And I think that listening in study sessions, I think in particular how students are engaged in terms of thinking about teaching and learning and what do we know about best practices. I'm very familiar with UMR, University of Minnesota in Rochester, and the innovative practices that they now have had 10 years of experience with. So I think there's opportunities to learn from each other in terms of the five campuses.
Thanks, Wendy. Randy?
In this day of electronic communication, I believe reducing redundancy between the campuses can be is important to do that. My son did his original medical training at Duluth and then transferred down here to finish it and did his other education here as well. But I think also working with other institutions, Iowa State, for example, works in a program where they, rather than Minnesota trying to be everything to everybody, partner with other institutions and, again, electronically try to broaden their base without trying to be everything to everybody.
Thanks, Randy. Mary?
And building off that, the University of Minnesota, when you look at it as a system, really is an enterprise. And it's built off of both the land grant, research, Twin Cities, but really the other campuses are access points. They were developed over the years as comprehensive universities where they can attend to local needs, educate local students, and really build the capacity of regions which contribute to the whole. As a system, I believe we need to, and it's time, to work together across systems. So University of Minnesota, working with Minnesota State, an example, again, using University of Minnesota Rochester, where our carpentry students work with their education students on building projects together. You'd never think of that.
Thank you, Mary, and thank you, region candidates. We are now going to move on to questions from the audience and social media, where you can still accept questions. What you need to do if you're on social media is send them to at UMN alumni. That's at UMN alumni. If you have a question, you can also find a UMA staff member who will have a questions card for you. So each of you have 60 seconds for your response, and here's the first question from the audience. Can you provide a framework to help us understand how you would influence heads of athletics to create a healthy and respectful environment? And Jean, we'll start with you.
I guess I have a little bit of dispute with the underlying premise of the question that the only place that an unhealthy environment exists would be in the athletic department. I think it's important for the university as a whole to provide an atmosphere of healthy respect for others, and I think it's important for that to take place throughout the system. However, that being said, everyone involved in these situations does have a right to be heard and have a right to due process. And yes, the student athlete does in many more ways represent the university than the basic student does and perhaps has a higher standard to uphold, but it doesn't mean that this problem is limited to the athletics department.
Thanks, Jean. Wendy?
In thinking about athletics, I certainly had a number of athletic-related issues when I was a school superintendent for 13 and a half years. I think transparency is very important and that there be a code of conduct. And when there is a complaint, there is a process that is defined and followed, and you stick to that.
Thank you, Wendy. Randy?
I agree that, for the most part, we do have a healthy environment there, but there are situations that we can all point to. Again, having a process for explaining, training the athletes on moral codes and so on and so forth, but also being able to respond quickly to complaints. I think we need to be able to do that, but I think I don't see that we have an unhealthy environment just in our athletic department.
Thank you, Randy. Mm-hmm. Mary?
I would agree that there's situations that permeate across any kind of institution. In regard to athletics, first and foremost, we're working with student athletes. So if we put the student athlete in the center and look at the academic support and the type of training that we provide for any of the students in Title IX, student code of conduct, that is across the board. And with athletics being a window to the university, it's important that coaches work with the students. They set the tone, role modeling all the way up and down and across the athletic department is a piece of that, both men and male and female athletics. But really focusing on student athletics, students and their academic work, and building the support structure around that. Athletics is often the only way some students come to higher education. And so what's that transition for that student as they come to the university?
Thank you, Mary. Brooks?
Thank you very much. I think this is a very good question. It's an important question. Student athletes are, in many ways, representatives of the university, and as such, they do need to be held to a higher standard. And I think when they get involved in athletics and they accept the responsibility of being a representative of the university, they have to behave in an appropriate way. So clearly defining what appropriate is for student athletes and all students as they come in, and then having a process for due process if issues arise. But ultimately, I believe in zero tolerance so that there isn't a mentality that you can get by with this sort of thing. Before things get to the newspaper, there's oftentimes events that come up before that that really need to be addressed early on, and the coaches and athletic directors need to recognize that.
Thank you, Brooks. We'll move on now to our next audience question. What qualities would you look for in the next president of the University of Minnesota? And Wendy, we'll start with you.
Certainly. Thank you. I just served on the Chancellor's Search Committee for the University of Minnesota in Rochester. I think that I would start with thinking about the vision for the challenges of a global world, and how the individual would position the University of Minnesota in that sense. I also think skills related to budgeting and financial management, being authentic, providing thoughtful leadership as being the key spokesperson for the University of Minnesota, certainly within our state, at the legislature, but also across the nation.
Thank you, Wendy. Randy?
I agree. I'd look at, want to be interested in what their vision would be for it is that we are a global university. We have work with institutions around the world. We have meetings in China and other places with the U.S. So having no understanding that experience and working as a team would be a big part of it. So I think looking at the background of that individual, what his or her vision would be moving forward, different from what it is now, how they their budgetary experience and how they handle that, those are all important issues.
Thanks, Randy. Mary?
Having the opportunity to both hire and evaluate presidents, participate in evaluation of presidents over the years, it's important, I believe, to look for somebody who is a thought leader, somebody who also has the big picture but can drill down into the kind of checking under the hood, if you would, can set the vision, define goals, define the measures on how one the organization will measure whether the goals are achieved or not, and really execute a plan. And that means empowerment, it means transparency, it means communication, it means not sitting in an office, it means getting out, getting to know the students, getting to know the faculty, and really it's a high skill set that presidents and chancellors need. And it's a serious, serious decision.
Thank you, Mary. Brooks?
Well, thank you for that question. And indeed, as Mary said, it's a serious, serious decision. The president of the university sets the tone for the entire organization. So in the next president, I would start by looking for someone who's unequivocally dedicated to excellence, that there's no second place allowed, and a visionary person, obviously with strong leadership capabilities, and someone who's a global thinker, can think outside of their own little world, because the world is flat and the university is going to be, it is, and it's going to continue to be a global leader. Someone has to have strong financial management skills because the budget of $3.8 billion every year is spent at the university, and we have to make sure it's done responsibly. And finally, someone who's inspirational. I think a leader who can really inspire and enlighten would be where we want to go.
Thanks, Brooks. Jean?
I think in the next president, I would want to look for someone who had a commitment to maximizing the unique structure that we have in the University of Minnesota system with the outstate campuses, a commitment to work with the board on furthering the core mission, and a commitment to cost control to make this experience affordable for our students, as well as a significant background in a similar type institution so that we could, in fact, have a good evaluation of what their experience and actual work style was.
Thank you, Jean. Another question from the audience. The legislature often pits MinSCU against the U of M, giving MinSCU its budget request, denying the U of M theirs. Why is this, and how can it change? And we'll start with Wendy.
Thank you. I think it can, there needs to be open conversation about that, and I would hope that the legislature could identify what it is that they are looking for from the University of Minnesota that they are not getting. In terms of the MinSCU getting what they asked for and the University of Minnesota not, I need to tell you that I haven't studied that, so I don't know that to be a truism. So I think that there needs to be accountability. So when the legislature gives dollars to MinSCU and the University of Minnesota, they need to know what they expect will happen to those dollars.
Thanks, Wendy. Randy?
Yeah, I haven't studied it either, what the issue is with the legislature, but I'm a supporter of both programs. I'm a supporter of even the trade schools like at Midwest, where I'm from down there, trade schools where students can do a two-year degree, get out with little debt, and have a job. And my other son did his undergraduate work at Mankato, very good education at that. So I'm a supporter of both of those programs. How they're balanced, I don't understand. I haven't looked at the issue particularly that you're bringing up. I think I would look at it, but I'm a supporter of both MinSCU and the university moving forward.
Thanks, Randy. Mary?
Both have unique missions, and the missions are complementary, not competitive. And it really is incumbent on us to take a look at higher education overall. When I worked with government relations, we would meet from the Minnesota State with University of Minnesota and talk about the value of higher education to the state as a whole, and not in a competitive way. We both have very different mission, but we need to articulate what it is that we need and justify that as we talk with the legislature. And what's the accountability? How will the legislature know that we've actually delivered on the goals that we've set in partnership with the legislature? So again, I think it's high time that the systems do more talking and include K-12, private sector, and we can really advance higher education for the whole state together.
Thank you, Mary. Brooks?
Thank you. When we think about the educational programs across the state, we have MinSCU, we have the University of Minnesota, we have private colleges. We have to look as Minnesotans and not be parochial about my school or my university, but these are all Minnesota dollars affecting Minnesota citizens, driving the Minnesota economy. And so it should not be a competitive nature. It should be simply where's the best money spent at this time, where's the need, and how do we move the ball forward? I think from the university standpoint, they clearly could use enhanced transparency. As I've visited with legislators in the last few weeks, there's a concern that we send money to the university, but we really don't understand where it's going. I think the university needs to be transparent about it, and everyone needs to understand what the dollars are buying and where it's going.
Thank you, Brooks. Jean.
I will admit that I have not really studied the details of the funding differential between the two systems. I believe the question that was actually asked is, why does it seem that the legislature pits the two systems against each other? And while this is probably not the room to say this in, I don't know. You need to ask them. They're the ones who are voting for this. It's hard to tell sometimes why things come out that way. But I do think that in the long run, the two systems need to work better together to mesh that so that the dollars are being maximized between the two systems.
Thank you, Jean, and thanks to all the audience members who submitted questions. To stay on time, we need to move to the 30-second closing statements. And to mix it up a bit, we'll proceed alphabetically by the first name of the candidates. And Brooks, we will start with you.
Thank you very much. And once again, thank you for moderating the session, and thank you to the Alumni Association. It's been a stimulating evening to be with all these interesting and talented folks. As a land-grant university, much of our history is steeped in agriculture. So if you will, bear with me for a moment, I'd like to share an analogy. To me, the University of Minnesota is like a farm. We specialize in growing minds. We grow minds of critical thinkers, artists, engineers, teachers, farmers, lawyers. On the farm, the Board of Regents, the President, and the state legislature share the responsibility for the harvest. As a regent, you have my word that I would dedicate myself to that harvest, making sure the crop receives the right amount of nutrients and water, not too much, not too little, and I would ensure that those who are tilling the fields represent the best minds, talented men and women of highest integrity. And when the harvest comes, usually that springtime for graduation, we'll see another infusion of bright, innovative thinkers, and we, as the citizens of Minnesota, will be blessed.
Thank you, Brooks. Jean?
I hadn't figured out the alphabetical order yet. Thank you to the Alumni Association for offering us this opportunity to discuss some topics of interest to the university. The university has an excellent staff of administrators, educators, scientists, and physicians that can manage the day-to-day operations of the U. The role of the board is to provide vision and guidance to the administration as they respond to the financial and operational concerns faced by educational institutions in our changing world, as well as dealing with the issues presented by being a healthcare provider in the current environment. I believe that my background in business and in health insurance would be assets for the board in its role overseeing the university.
Thank you, Jean. Wendy?
Thank you for the opportunity to be a part of this forum. I can assure you I will be well prepared, ask thoughtful, analytical, and why questions as a regent. Students are our future. I believe in continuous improvement. We can be better tomorrow than we are today. The University of Minnesota needs to be as well, as we face the challenges of our global future. My vision for the University of Minnesota is to solve the challenges of a diverse and global world by delivering excellent education to students.
Thank you, Wendy. Mary.
I too want to thank you for attending tonight's forum, and I hope you find that I'm the right candidate at the right time, high energy, passion, the right skill set to be a servant on behalf of all the people of Minnesota, one who will seriously attend to and drive forward the rich legacy of the University of Minnesota, our state's flagship university.
Thank you, Mary. Randy.
Having been here a couple of times before and losing to Dr. Simmons both times, I still remain a strong advocate of the University of Minnesota. And advancing the mission of this institution has meant so much to me personally. I think my business experience, my animal health experience, my ag experience are important. Those are big industries in our state, and I think my focus on that, along with the other student debt and expenses, I can bring a lot to that region. Board.
Thanks, Randy, and thanks to each of you region candidates for being with us tonight and for your interest on serving. Oh, I'm sorry. Did I, Wendy, did I miss you? No, I got you.
No, you were going by alphabetical first name, and
I mixed
it
up.
Hit Wendy, I had figured out that I was going to be last. So I was okay.
I'm terribly sorry. My apologies.
Problem,
oh, no.
Oh, excuse me. Sorry.
Oh, that's okay. No. Well, thank you for everyone in the audience as well for participating tonight. There are a couple of questions, unfortunately, we could not get to because of time constraints, but there's a great opportunity to talk to the candidates for the regent seat coming up here. We're going to have a reception upstairs at the Legislative Library on the sixth floor. You'll have an opportunity to meet each candidate individually. And let's give the candidates a hand. And on behalf of the University of Minnesota Alumni Association, thanks to all of you in the audience for attending the Region Candidate Forum. Have a wonderful evening.